faces to a lot of y'all folks here, and they've been married for a year and a half.
A little less than that.
A little less, okay. I was close. And then Brian and Sadie Lewis, they've been married for just under 4 years and are parents to sweet little Annabelle, who's sitting right there, who's about to turn 3. And they moved to Smyrna last year. They're parishioners of CTK and are active. Brian sings in the choir. Sadie is involved with the Flower Guild and have been just involved in many different things. And then Michelle and Nick have been married 21 years, and they've been in Atlanta ever since, parishioners of Christ the King ever since. They have 3 kids, and I'm not going to steal their thunder and kind of let them elaborate a little more on that. And then we also have Lori and Pete Payton, who have 3 grown kids in their 30s and 3 precious grandchildren. So we are very excited to hear each of their testimonies and their witness. And then at the end, we'll open up for questions and discussion. So without further ado.
Could you declare?
I guess we're the rookie married couple. we've only been married about a year, so we'll try to give some of our experience so far in that. And I think for background on both of us, we both came from families where there was divorce. In Amanda's family, it happened earlier on. In my family, it happened a little later on. And so I think when we were both single, something that that was both important to us was, I guess, trying to figure out what does Catholic marriage mean, right? What does that look like? We both had very good families where we grew up, going to Mass and everything, but what does a good Catholic marriage look like? And one of the interesting things, Stephen asked us to speak tonight, we actually were both involved in a class on love and responsibility that a friend of ours, Brendan Dudley, taught back when we were both single. And I think it was really interesting there to kind of get the framework of what the church's teachings were on theology of the body and what does a Catholic marriage look like. And kind of a few months after that, that's when we ended up meet a friend of a friend through there. We met at a restaurant there, started talking to a restaurant one there and started dating after that. And I think what was helpful for us was we had a lot of good Catholic community around us that kind of showed us what it looked like. We had some other young married couples. I was in a small group with Brian Lewis here, and a lot of other younger married couples kind of modeled what does a good Catholic marriage look like. And then also just having some other good friends who are going through dating, trying to do it the Catholic way, which is very different than what I'd experienced, kind of in college, how a lot of people would go about dating. And one of the things that we kind of experienced, or one of the things that was important for us, is someone had given us the advice, hey, if you're dating, you ought to be thinking about marriage. You don't have to be weird about it, right, on the first date, start talking about marriage. But, be casual for a while, but at some point, right, is this somebody you could marry? Is this somebody you can marry, like, in about 2 years? And once we kind of started officially dating, those were conversations we kind of kept having, what we were looking for in marriage and whatnot. And I think when we when we eventually got engaged and everything, we knew a lot about each other's faith life. We'd even started to pray together and whatnot. And I think those are all things that have helped us so far in our first year of marriage. And I think the biggest thing, has been our experience in being married, is how it calls us out of being focused, especially for me, being so focused on myself, right? It's kind of one of the things we'll talk about a lot is like, man, like even though it was about a year ago, life was so much different when we were single. And what's different is you've always got somebody there, good and a bad thing, but it pulls you out of your, for us, it kind of pulls us out of ourselves. And, even now, one of the other things, as you get married and, we've been practicing NFP, right, you start to think about, okay, do we want to have children at some point? And so starting to have regular conversations on, you know, praying about when do we want to have children. And it, you know, it happened probably 8-10 months into marriage. You know, we felt called to have children, and you know, we're now, we've got a new one on the way. And so, but a lot of that was just stuff we started, even when we were engaged, stuff we started talking about there. And so I think just, you know, from an overall standpoint, as we were going, you know, as we were dating and everything, just a lot of the feedback we got from you was just make sure you talk through a lot of different things. And I think that's been something in our marriage that's, you know, been important for us to, you know, just coming home, having dinner together most nights, being able to talk through things while we have time right now. We don't have kids running around. And, you know, being able to pray together. And, you know, that's kind of what, you know, our married life is looking like so far. We're still pretty young in this and trying to figure it out. But that's kind of been our experience so far.
I can add a couple of things. I think my husband did a good job. Well, one thing to say is that I think to date, marriage has been like the most joyful, like life-bringing experience of my life. And the grace of the sacrament is very, very real. And yeah, I think this is also like a newlywed still speaking. But not only like the grace is real, and then the church, we may not understand all of the teachings of the church as to like chastity and why is it important to practice NFP and what, you know, X, Y, and Z, but things have been making more sense after we entered into marriage, and you see the fruit of it, and you see the wisdom of the church, and really the freedom that comes with laying the boundaries and with taking those vows, and yeah, being faithful to what the church has taught us. So that's all been very fruitful. Another thing you reminded me of, so when we were dating, we both got the advice to spend as much time with each other as possible and spend it outside, not indoors, and not like in front of a TV, or I don't know what else we could have been doing, but but we brought that into our marriage where when we got married, we decided that we didn't need to buy a TV, and neither of us owned one anyway. And that has been really fruitful. Not a Catholic thing per se, but really the quality of our relationship and the quality of the little time that we do have together in the evenings, basically because you're working all day, has really been enhanced because we don't have other distractions for the most part, and we're just really focused on each other or whoever else we're spending time with. And then, let's see, to be involved in the community is also really important, or at your parish. So we've been doing our CIA together this year, and that's been a neat way to serve together, to sponsor together. But yeah, there's so many other ministries, which I think you're covering next week, actually, that you can serving together is a beautiful way as well to live out your marriage.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michelle Jurich, and this is Nick Jurich, and we're both lawyers, which is just another way of saying we can really talk a lot, so I'm going to try to hold myself back. It's so inspiring to hear from Richard and Amanda. It's really a good reminder of things that we thought more about 20 years ago, and so it's super to hear those again, because I guess we're the couple that's got a 10th grader, 8th grader, 4th grader, so we're really into the kid thing right now, and getting them raised and starting to get them out the door. So you do sort of forget about marriage a little bit during that time frame. So I guess it's good to try to refocus on that. But it is really difficult. I love that you talked about not having a TV. We don't ever watch our TV, really, because you're never together. We joke, one of my daughter's on a softball team, and one of her teammates said to her one day, "Are your parents divorced?" And she's like, "No, what are you talking about?" She said, "I never see them together." So you are, you know, when you have three kids, someone's always off doing one thing or another. But I think the way we try to bring our faith into our family is just doing things about church together. When we first got married, we went to 7:30 Mass on Sunday morning, and we've just kept doing that, much to the chagrin of our teenagers. So we do that, and it's 7:30 Mass is very small, and it's a family, and so we can't leave now because everyone would wonder where we went. So our kids are stuck with that Mass. Two of my kids are altar servers. Nick teaches Sunday school, and now my older two children help teach Sunday school. So just doing those things together as a family is a great way to sort of bring faith into our life and bring them in with the family. I do the women's Bible study on Wednesday, and my kids know I do that, and you know, I occasionally drop things about that into the conversation just to sort of try to show them that you're always learning in your faith and you never know everything about it, and there's always more that you can do, just depending on, you know, what role and what age you are. So those are ways that we try to model our Catholicism. We always joke when we go out of town, we always go to church. And my daughter, who watches, is it John Mulaney, the comedian? I guess he's a Catholic comedian. And his line, well, yes, his line always is, you know, they have masses there too. So we always get out the Mass Times app and we figure out, you know, where the church is, when we'll go to Mass. So, again, you know, that doesn't make everybody happy all the time, and it's not the most convenient thing, but they're all ways to sort of remind us of what the center of our faith life is. So
we can tell by the complaints of the kids when we're actually right, having an impact. And then you see by comments then that they'll make that they actually did pick up on what the message you were trying to convey, and it's very rewarding. To see that, because then they kind of take pride in some of that
in
some of that pain, especially if it sets it apart from some of their classmates or their friends. So I was not a Catholic when we met, and we met when I was in law school and she was in grad school, and we met, and then she went to law school, and so we had some years apart after we had first started dating, where we really kind of knew we were going to get married, but we didn't want to get married and then live apart while she was at school and I worked here for several years. So we just were engaged for an interminably long period of time. But during that time, I figured I better understand more about Catholicism if I was going to be married to a Catholic, and it happened to coincide with the publication of the Catechism in English. So like a good lawyer, I bought the Catechism and sort of read it to figure out what it was all about. I was raised Presbyterian, and had been a pretty faithful Presbyterian. My mother had been an elder in the church. But as I read it, and it all kind of made sense, and if any of you have gone through this process and also then gone through RCIA, you'll understand. But we're not here about my conversion story. But what made it really possible, though, to have that work, despite what I thought was going to be sort of an attention in the marriage, and then about 2 years after we got married, so about, I guess, 6 years mm-hmm. after we met, I became Catholic. Went through they had this speedy summer RCIA for those who know about their faith a lot, which I loved because that was perfect. What we really discovered, though, was aside from all of the doctrine that I came to embrace and believe, and teachings about faith, morals that I came to embrace and believe, is that we had both had very similar upbringings and were raised in very similar households with similar morals, and has more than the shared faith has been that shared background that has really helped us then in creating a household like that of our own. And kind of remembering what is most important. And I think that would have been present even had I not come to embrace the Catholic faith, but had even stayed with my own faith tradition. I think that would have still been a core element of what we had together. And it was inspiring to hear you all. And it was you said, you know, you spend as much time together, and you know, you had that time after in the evenings. And I happened right after we were married to keep a little daily diary, because you have time to do that when you don't have three kids. And so it documents like what we did in those first years before we had kids, because we were married for almost four yeah. years before we had children. And it's depressing to see how we spent our weekends and our evenings and that. And we ate out a lot more than we do. So
that's just a way of saying embrace each phase.
Enjoy each phase. Because yes. I wouldn't trade that now for these three kids. Sometimes I would, but not, generally not. But those were a great 4 years. And yours will be shorter, but no less important. And embrace each phase, because they're each different, but you can each find together some meaning in them and some real joy in them. So it's fun to hear that and remember that that joy from those first few years.
Yep.
I think that's about it.
Yep.
We'll talk kind of about phases, but we'll start as like who we are. We'll start at the beginning. So Brian and I have known each other since we were about 16-ish. We were acquaintances from afar.
Our families went to the same parish while we were mm-hmm. growing up. We just didn't quite run into each other.
We're each one of five kids. We were the families that took up like the whole pew. So I was like, oh, that other big family over there.
Yeah.
So we knew each other. And then as we had some mutual friends in high school, we became better friends at Georgia Tech, where we both went to college. And then following graduation, through involvement here actually at the cathedral, is kind of how our dating life began. So if you
Sadie has been a parishioner here at Christ the King for, you know, 8-9 years. Mm-hmm. While she was in college, I didn't become a parishioner until after I graduated. And so to kind of get my feet wet, you know, I joined a Monday evening Bible study here. Invited her along,
the group setting.
You know, see if I can get to know in a group setting. Easy, just, you know.
But yeah, so from there we started dating, and then after a period of our dating, we were such good friends beforehand that it kind of went very quickly and naturally.
Really, yeah, we dated for 7 months.
Before we got engaged. Which
but
is
we
awesome.
Were engaged for, you know...
14
months,
anyway,
so that's fine.
He proposed in the cathedral mm-hmm. right in front of the altar there, which was really important to us. The cathedral here has really been such an important and integral part of our lives that it really has been core and to every single phase. So either when we were dating, when we were engaged, we've been involved in mm-hmm. numerous different ministries.
So back in the day when we were first dating and our works were kind of close to the cathedral, mm-hmm. so we would hit up the 5:30 p.m. Mass.
The daily Mass in the Duval.
In the chapel over there.
We taught PSR together, too, when we were just dating.
Yeah, we taught PSR. That's how I got her here at the cathedral on a Tuesday night
to propose.
So, we've just kind of... We've slide in there.
Yeah.
But no, we've both kind of had that ingrained in us mm-hmm. as we were growing up. My entire family, we lived two driveways down from the church and across the street from the rectory, so mm-hmm. we were always the family called on if we needed to go and altar serve or anything else that was necessary.
He's one of five kids, and I am too. And so
I know you practiced mass growing up.
I did practice mass growing up.
So that's pretty good.
We had these little mass coasters, and we played mass. So. But with that, we both had kind of, you know, y'all were talking about that too, just like a foundation of similar morals, similar faith backgrounds that we were able to talk about and to discern as we were dating is, what does this look like for us? What does this look like moving forward? And I think particularly to speak to parenting of a young child, and thankfully she's being somewhat quiet right now, but pray that we get through this. But you know, as that shift, our marriage has grown and shifted as well, and I think it shifted for the better. We've always been a team, and I think we've built a foundation of trust. But as our priorities have shifted to now include Annabelle, and what does that mean as far as her formation, and how do we make sure we're balancing our personal faith, our marriage, our growing careers and our aspirations there with what does it look like with, you know, growing a family. So it's been always, it's a juggling act, but it's a really beautiful and fun one most of the time. And I think it ebbs and flows with each season as to like what gets our priority and our focus.
Yeah. And I'd say, I mean, I don't know. Getting married is life changing, right? But you're still two individuals kind of moving toward the same goal. If, you know, I had a Father Kevin Peek tell me in college that when you're looking for somebody to get married to, you know, you're looking for a battle buddy, right? You're going into battle together. And if you need to rest, you've got somebody to cover your back. And when you have a child and go into the parenting phase, it's a complete game changer, right? Because she, you know, is completely dependent on others to learn and grow about this world, to learn and grow about faith. And so it's kind of a complete shift there, that really teaches, oh, patience. No, it teaches joy. It shows you how selfish you can be sometimes. And so there's just so many graces that come out of being a parent that point toward God. One that really sticks out to me is oftentimes, you know, anytime Annabelle's crying or upset, it's because of the, you know, it's fear of the unknown. You know, she doesn't understand what's coming next. It's not going exactly to her plan.
Lately, it's fire drills at school.
Yeah, so she's really, they had a fire drill go off during nap time, which was not ideal. And she let
she's
us know that.
Weeks, so.
But, you know, even, you know, not letting her have, you know, so much sugar, all these things that she thinks she knows what she wants and doesn't. It's a real reflection, or I've seen it as a real reflection of our relationship with God. And even when we think we know which direction we want to go, or if there's things we're unsure about, God is, you know, all-knowing, all-wise, and can really help. It's just really helpful to know that we can lean in and trust in Him.
And I think the element of parenthood, it just adds another layer to our marriage and to our vocation. I think our vocation, you know, we've all heard it's to get each other to heaven, and that becomes really real on a daily basis when sticking to a budget, not fun, doesn't feel like you're getting each other to heaven, you know, like things along those lines are hard. So it doesn't always feel good, but you know that you're working toward the same goal and the same finish line, and that and being on that same team is what sets us up for hopeful success with parenting, to be aligned in our goal and to share that same finish line, but to now not only have it for the two of us, but to have it for the third, for Annabelle as well.
I mean, we've definitely had to say that out loud. If we're, you know, butting heads, it's just take a step back. We both, you know, you have to kind of assume the best intentions on the other person's part, because you know each other, right? So you know that they've got the best intentions in mind. And when you look at it from that lens, it makes it it makes it easier to see where different people are coming from. Yeah. So that's super helpful.
One thing we do, I'm a very big planner, so one thing we do each year too is to start the year off, we set aside time for prayer and to actually like make goals for the year. And we have a quarterly check-in, and it's very structured. It speaks to me, but...
That we hit or miss. Yeah, hit or miss.
Flexibility, right?
Yeah.
But with that, it gives us a filter for how do we want to spend our days. We think about those goals as we plan our weeks, as we plan our months. And while sometimes, let's just say like this week there's a really big thing going on at work, maybe it leans more toward career one time than the next, it can ebb and flow, and those goals give us a filter to make sure we're carving out time for what matters most to us, and that mm-hmm. we are very intentionally choosing for our family what we want it to look like long term. Yeah. So that's something we've seen a lot of success with.
Yeah, that's been super helpful. And again, we don't have as much advice to give on teaching Annabelle just yet. I mean, she's, except that at this age, you know, she's a sponge. Yeah. She's absorbing everything. Mm-hmm. So it's been great to see that as we incorporate our faith into our daily lives, she's kind of picking up on it as she goes.
It's awesome the things she can pick up on and model. Like, we never, like, actively taught her really how to say the sign of the cross. We always just like say Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and now she kind of does like some version of it, and you know, like, okay, it's great, you know, like she mm-hmm. picks up on things. She can
point Jesus out to you in any crucifix situation. And any picture,
sometimes embarrassingly, like when someone's walking by and they're short, Jesus, if it's on their necklace, like, okay, but she can, she spots me a mile
that's
away,
good,
which
you know,
is great.
Good things,
yeah. But and I think eventually it'll become more sorry, my friends are me. It'll become more intentional as she grows, but for right now, it's really just a model mentality, and I think throughout our parenting, hopefully we'll always model that so they have something to work towards, you know.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting as we kind of close up what we were saying, it's worth noting that we have a really great support system. Mm-hmm. Like we both said, we're one of five kids, and they're our families are in the area, so we've had just lots of benefits on that front, supporting us, and both of our works are really understanding. So it's good to surround yourself with a community of people that can pick you up, help you keep going, and people that you enjoy doing life with. So.
With that, we don't have all the answers, but we're trying.
You come? Okay.
Lost my sheet.
We're Pete and Laurie Payton. I'll let Laurie talk in just a second, but we're representing all your parents and maybe grandparents. So we have maybe a few observations. But first, I'd like to just start by saying congratulations. And I would predict great things for this group, because you care enough to come to these kind of discussions. It tells us a lot about what kind of parents and friends and neighbors and all the rest that you're likely to be. So I think as you enter that stage where you either have children, get married, you know, at some point down the road have children of your own, you know, you're going to do a great job, I'm sure, of loving them. I think the only little bit of advice I would have in that regard is it's even more important for your children to see you love each other, that relationship between the two of you is more important, really, than even your relationship with the kids. So again, we've been married 40 years, have been proud members of this parish 28 years. So there's a lot we could talk about, but we'll try to keep it short.
Yeah. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Everybody back there? I'm sorry. These things kind of intimidate me. So, like Pete said, we've been married for 40 years. We were young. We were 23 when we got married. And he was not Catholic when we got married, but I grew up Roman Catholic in Memphis, Tennessee. And we had, we have three amazing children. They're 30, almost 31, 33, and 36. And
went to school right there.
Went to school right here. And then they went to St. Pius, and then they all went to Georgia. It's just kind of amazing to think about. They all went to all the same schools, but especially in this city. But anyway, they all but one married a Catholic, and the one that didn't marry a Catholic, we adore. We're working on her. No, I'm just teasing. I'm just teasing. She's so wonderful and just such a beautiful mother and a beautiful wife to our son. I will tell you that early on when I was pregnant, we were pregnant, I was pregnant, we were getting ready to have children. It's so great to just start praying for your child then, to start praying for their, you know, their health, for their futures, for their spouse, if that's the route they decide to take, their vocations. And just to continue to pray for them throughout. When you start kind of letting them go and give them their wings to, you know, start going here, there, by themselves, or start driving, you know, they're God's children. They are God's. They're kind of on loan to you to nurture and love and to help God in the right way with the Holy Spirit and our Lord. But, you know, I just remember that every time they'd walk out of the door with those keys for the first time, I would, you know, we always hugged and I'd put the sign of the cross on their back. I didn't think they knew that, but they did. And I'd say to myself, Lord, bless them and keep them. They were yours before they were ours. Please protect them. And, you know, so prayer has always been a big part of our family's life. We had dinners together every night. I don't care whether you had ballet or tennis or the theater or whatever you had. We had tried to have dinner every night together and say, you know, say the blessing. We got on our knees every night, even up till when they went to college, and said our prayers. Sometimes those really got drawn out because some of the little ones didn't want to go to bed. But anyway.
And one little tip, I always like to share this because I did not grow up with this, but Laurie did. And it really was a powerful thing throughout our lives. And we still do it. At dinner time, we ask each person to say, what was the best part of your day? What was the worst part of your day? And it's helpful for the two of us to kind of focus right then on what the other person needs to hear. But I think particularly when you have children who don't really like to necessarily come out with what happened during their day, they're under pressure with their siblings, you know, in that environment. So the truth does come out one way or the other. But that was just a great thing.
And then they would talk amongst themselves, yeah, about it too, things that maybe they were a little bit sensitive to talk to their parents about. But communication, as y'all well know, is so very important, and prayer and, you know, being available. I mean, y'all are so incredible in your, you know, in being two lawyers, and, you know, the main thing is it doesn't matter, you know, when y'all are together, I'm sure it's such a special time, and that's what's important. The time you spend together is so, so very important. And Pete hit the nail on the head. You know, for your family, not even just your children, but your siblings that might be incurring some problems in their marriage or their lives or whatever, it's very important that you show your they all came out of your love for one another. You all became a part of each other's lives because your love for one another. And so, you know, I know our life, our children have not been perfect. We have certainly not been perfect as parents. But we've always learned to say, I'm sorry. We've always learned to come to the church, to the priest, when there's been a major something going on with one of our children or one of their friends. And I'm not talking about little things. I'm talking about big things when they're in high school or college. But to be able to bring them, or for you yourselves to come to the church, it's our home, y'all, it's our spiritual home, to come to the church. And like y'all all have said, to be involved in the church, so that you have that foundation, and the priest can guide you, the priest or whoever is here in that, you know, the Stephen ministry or whatever. But it's also,
I just wanted to add on to that real quick. Again, knowing a little bit about just the quality of person that's here, I think one of the things we discovered as our children got older is, you know, from the standpoint of your influence, they're going to be fine, more than likely. But one thing you don't always appreciate is as they get, particularly in the teenage years, it's the influence of their peer group that also becomes very important. So if you have a lot of family here, that's great. If you were like us and don't have a lot of family here, I think even more important to, whether it's church or school or whatever communities you're part of, it does take a village. It does take a village. And I think besides doing all that you can for your children, also being very mindful of kind of the sets and the communities that you're part of.
Mm-hmm. But another thing that I just, you know, once your children are out of college and have their jobs and are married, it is no longer your responsibility to raise them. You have done that. You've done your job. It is now your responsibility to help support their family, to love their family, to help shepherd their family, you know, under your wings, but they're no longer yours. So, you know, I think that's one of the struggles is you think, oh gosh, I'd really like them to do this that way, or I really like them to send their kid to this school, because we have a 7-year-old grandson that's going through his first communion right now, and we have a 2-year-old granddaughter and then a 1.5-year-old grandson. And I do want to tell you that, you know, we've loved all stages in our kids' lives. We really have. They've been brought such joy. Some have been way more challenging than others. And I know we've all been there. We all know that. But just to love your kids through it. And the last thing I want to say is I hope it won't make me cry, but to see your child hold their own child in their arms is one of the most beautiful, holy moments. It really is. And, you know, be involved with the church. Things become more beautiful. I think somebody says it. When you're involved with things in the church, we started out helping with the baptismal preparation class.
Might have been some of you.
Might have been. That's what Pete said. Pete said, do you think we did? But doing that, it was so beautiful to see parents come back to the church that had been away from the church. Now, we've been involved in Bible studies, flower guilds, you know, the different. I still do children's liturgy because I love the little ones and just have worked with them my whole life. But now we're doing sponsor couple for the engaged. And what a beautiful thing that is. And I think we're learning more from them than they're learning from us. But it's a beautiful thing. But the church is your home along with your own family home. And, you know, you can't ever love your children enough, and don't ever. I think one of the things that Pete and I have always said about raising our children is you must be a team. You must be a team, and you must be consistent in your love even when it hurts.
And the last thing I'll say is for all of you who are parents or want to become parents, a little plug for grandparents, but also those of you who might be aunts or uncles or godparents or friends or whatever. You know, it wasn't really until we became grandparents that I really thought a lot about the fact that one of the most important influences in my life was my grandmother on my mother's side. And probably some of you had, you know, those strong connections to more your extended family. So again, in a very fluid kind of community like Atlanta, where you might have siblings living all over or what have you, I think just to be, you know, thoughtful about that connection to family and the roles that you can play beyond just being a parent, being an aunt, uncle, and at some point grandparent or whatever, is also very important.
That village is very important. The only other thing I want to say, when Pete and I were caring for my parents in Memphis, and I was back and forth to Memphis, he had a traveling job, and our children were pretty young. I think they were pretty much y'all's, Michelle and Nick, but you know, we were like y'all, we were in and out, and there was some connection lost, you know, because of the busyness of raising the children. He, you know, helped coach their sports and things like that. But we felt disconnected in a way. And we had read about the marriage encounter weekends. And we thought, oh, you know, we're not having trouble. You know, I wonder if we go, if, you know, Pete said, well, I don't want to go and sit and everybody talk about their marriages, you know. But we went to this weekend, and it was priests and other lay people helping to guide you. and you journaled. And it was a time right after my father died, had passed away. And but anyway, it was one of the most enriching, healing. I mean, it was beautiful. So don't ever hesitate to think that this is too, what do you call it, fruity, or, you know, don't. The church has, I think y'all said it so beautifully. Once you get married, you realize, and you have children, or you become in a relationship, or you start to think about the church's richness in what it has to offer, and the priests who are here to shepherd us are one of the most beautiful resources you have. So don't ever forget about them, and always stay involved with the church.
Thank you.